This episode of The A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
You know, he was the co-architect of this deck. We're talking about getting matching Blood Moon tattoos. That's how much we freaking love our baby. Well, KYT, you know, find a friend and then make a deck in an Eternal format. It feels really good.
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to your ears by ManaDeprived.com, home of Canadian Magic.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI court for crimes they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team.
KYT.
Anything that costs a shit ton of mana, you're just like, bang! And they're like, fuck.
How does that go?
Bang! Fuck.
Jay Boosh.
And that's like the hyper angle. I never want to play in another GP again. I never want to play in another GP.
Jeremy.
And you're the reason I play Magic today. I'm like, I just like, I die. I was like just melting on the inside like that. I have inspired this kid to play Magic.
And Matt.
So I'm having this conversation with this guy in Chile about my deck. And then I'm getting pizza from a guy in Canada. Like, Magic is fucking weird.
And now, The A-Team.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 292 of The A-Team Podcast. This is KYT, and it's just me again, without the team. And I know people enjoyed the last episode, which is me, mostly solo effort. Shoutouts to Doug Potter for joining me. But I know people want to hear some of the other guys again. They really want them, but sadly, they're not here. It's just me again. Oh, what? What the fuck is that? Holy shit!
Whoa!
Whoa! Matt!
Yeah, hey!
You made it!
I made it.
Oh my god. Thank god.
I'm on a podcast, apparently. I forgot this last month.
I don't think a lot of our listeners wanted another solo show, so I'm super happy that you're back. And actually, genuinely excited to talk to you not only about Magic stuff, but non-Magic stuff as well. So let's get it out of the way. Why have you been missing for so long?
Well, apparently weddings are very difficult to organize.
Like, how much time were you sort of, did it feel like a super last minute type jam, a lot of things to do in a small period of time, or were you pacing yourself throughout the year?
We'd kind of done some stuff like ramping up into the, our wedding, but the 3 or 4 weeks, like the last month, were basically our hectic. Get everything completely organized, get my suit tailored, do all this other little stuff, go shop for this and that. And I didn't want to be one of those husbands that let their bride basically do everything. So I was much more involved probably than your typical husband. And then in addition, we didn't do any of the normal bachelor stuff in advance. So basically when I did all my bachelor stuff, it was, my best man flies in Wednesday before the wedding. We all hang out, a bunch of us, on Thursday and Friday. The wedding's on Saturday. I have family and company on Sunday and Monday. It just was a whole big affair to plan. And when you're working a full-time job and you have other stuff going on, it's very difficult. So, I mean, it wasn't just that the wedding was keeping me from podcasting, because I could have shown up. I just wouldn't have it had much to contribute, because honestly, I was not playing any Magic. My mind was not on Magic coverage. I completely missed the Pro Tour because it happened on my wedding day. So yeah, I was like, well, you know, I don't really have anything to contribute. So I'll just tag Doug Potter and he'll just say everything I've always wanted to say.
I don't think any of us would play that much, but of course I totally understand. So were you happy with the overall result? I mean, you looked amazing, and I have to say
thank you.
I don't know if it's your new profile picture, but when you updated recently where we see you like with genuine happiness, I think Ruben Bressler said, typed the words that I wanted to say. Just seeing you that happy, that genuinely happy in that picture was very heartfelt. Like I felt it in my heart.
Yeah, it was incredible. Our wedding went off basically without a hitch. It was everything we wanted it to be. We had a lot of fun. We had tons of friends and family. We had karaoke. We had a bunch of really fun little candid moments. Got a lot of photography, all that stuff. One of the things that was a highlight, one of the things that was a big takeaway for me actually is a life lesson for weddings, is that just to keep a positive attitude, because we had some stuff happen that wasn't quite ideal. Like our wedding DJ, for example, wasn't, there were some silences and there were some flubs and stuff, but we just stayed positive and went with it and really just enjoyed it. And I learned that staying positive helps not only you be happier, it helps everybody around you be happier.
Sweet. I'm really glad to hear that. So when you decide to come back to Magic a bit, where did you look to begin to start getting back?
Well, it is a modern season, if there is said to be seasons anymore. But I knew exactly when I wanted to come back. Basically, I knew that there were some events in the weekends following my wedding. So we're going in from a single PPTQ weekend to next week there's a double PPTQ weekend, and then the week after that there's GP Indy. So basically on my way back, I wanted to test Modern. I wanted to play Modern, and that's what I did. So it's kind of a bummer because my four color rights deck went missing. I'm not sure where it's at. I'm not sure when exactly it went missing. But that was kind of a blow, because it was Forkos and some Shockland, or not Shocklands, but some Painlands, and nothing too crazy, but enough to be like, all right, well, I gotta figure something else out for Standard.
Right.
But still got my Modern deck, and I freaking love it.
I mentioned to, I think, Jeremy last episode, well, on the original version of the podcast, how I actually ended up playing against your deck FNM. And luckily for me, the Blood Moon didn't affect me as much as it did, but I was kind of put off. Like, wow, this is not just picking up steam on not just EFRO playing it at a GP, but I'm seeing this at a local level, and he wasn't the only land destruction deck in the FNM, so I was like, whoa,
yeah.
It's picking up.
And yeah, I did see somebody, Harrison Gills, played it to, I'm not sure what his final record was going after round 15 at SCG Syracuse, New York, whatever they're calling it now. But I know that I watched him in round 14 beat up on Dredge, which I felt pretty vindicated about, so, but I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah, but that's the first thing I saw. One of your Facebook updates was your story, your recent PPTQ.
Yeah, and I don't. Do you want me to get into it? I'll get into it.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to spoil the ending. That's what I want to do. So have you march us towards the end here?
So I went undefeated in the Swiss. And not just undefeated. I did not lose a game in the Swiss. And I played 5 of my 6 rounds.
Okay, wow. Okay. So decent size. 6 rounds is pretty decent size.
Yeah, it was almost 40 players. So we played 6 rounds, cut to a top 8. I basically played my first rounds. I have my little sheets here. So it was really funny because I'm talking with this local guy case from KC, Anthony Johnson, who was playing Jund. He was newer player to Jund. And then my friend Michael, my blood bestie, my teammate, my guy where my friend were getting, you know, he was the co-architect of this deck. We're talking about getting matching Blood Moon tattoos. That's how much we freaking love our baby. Well, KYT, you know, find a friend and then make a deck in an Eternal format. It feels really good.
Yeah, one that you both are like constantly playing together and love it and are passionate about, not just playing it, but tuning it. Yeah, I have to admit that must be something.
Yeah. So going into the tournament, we were actually pretty stoked because we were thinking that we were just going to kind of pick it up and play it and kind of pick up where we left off. But we had decided actually to make two critical changes Friday night and Saturday morning that really helped us out. And one of those changes was something that some players have been doing. I know that Ifro did it, and I know that my friend James did it when he picked up the deck, was that we swapped one Beast Within for the fourth Stone Rain. So basically we're playing a 4-2 Stone Rain Beast Within split now. The format is just less blue now. So the whole having your stuff countered happens less often. So the effect that you get from Stone Rain without the drawback of giving them a 3-3 is much more important now than it ever was, especially as aggressive as modern can be now with dredge and stuff like that. You don't ever want to give dredge another 3-3 to beat your face with. So, and we actually felt a lot, I don't know, it was just something that clicked with that sort of 4-2 split where it was just like, we think that a lot of the problems we were having with the deck previously was because just there was that imbalance of Stone Rains to Beast Withins where we wanted that Stone Rain effect so badly, but we understood that late game it was kind of weak sometimes and that you don't want to draw a whole bunch of them and that, you know, their sorcery speed and they can't get around counterspells. But ultimately, against a lot of these decks like Scapeshift's not going to play counterspells unless they're playing blue, obviously. But we just determined that that's the one effect that we wanted more of. And we believe it helped us a lot on that day because basically we were just destroying lands on turn two or turn three without any drawback. And we still have the Beast Within to help us out in a pinch, like when we need to destroy crucial permanents like Planeswalkers or a Colony Heart Expedition before it pops or whatever the case may be. But that was one huge change that we discovered. And then the other Friday night was one that was much more surprising. So I picked up my deck. I was getting it all ready for the tournament on Saturday. And then I decided to look through my binders for just needed for the deck because I still needed to find like one more Baeloth and one more like a couple Anger of the Gods and things like that. But one of the cards I found in my trade binder was Chameleon Colossus.
Ooh.
And I was like, all right, so Chameleon Colossus. So it's a 4/4 for 4 in green, and that's already like fits the profile of a lot of the cards that we play with Thrawn and Obstinate Baeloth. But it has protection from black, which is insane. We were thinking about it, and I was thinking about it. I'm like, I thought about how it matched up against Jund, and I thought, well, it can be blocked by Kalidus Tassiger or a Gurmag Angler from the Delve decks, or Death Shadow from Suicide Zoo. So those are all cards that we actually kind of have problems with sometimes because they just can get so big so quickly.
Right.
And then I thought, well, it dodges Terminate and Maelstrom Pulse and Culligan's Command, and they just have to double bolt it. And then I thought, well, against Goyf, we just pump it, and it becomes an 8/8. Which is bigger than a Goyf can ever become. Mm-hmm, so we had already been playing Dismember for this very reason, because we wanted to deal with all of the aforementioned cards. And then we just found Chameleon Colossus, and we're like, oh my god, we totally want to play this card. So we played it. It came up a couple times where we basically... It's a nice mid-rangey threat that's just cheap enough to be played early, but also aggressive enough to where you can turn up the heat if you need to just chunk somebody for 8 for 2 turns in a row. and just really put a clock on them. So we really like Chameleon Colossus. We're trying to figure out whether we want to play one or two in the 75, but that's been the latest additions to the deck.
And one of their answers that you mentioned is not that great against you, Liliana, because you have all these mana dorks that you could have to sacrifice to it, right?
Correct. Correct.
Okay.
They do have, in that particular matchup, you know, Liliana is their out.
Right.
They do also play, you know, sometimes you'll come across a Damnation or an Edict kind of effect that isn't Liliana. They're much less common. But outside of Double Bolt or making me discard it or making me sack it to Liliana, it's very difficult for them to deal with. Now, they do have, you know, in that match, you do have the reality that they can pick off a lot of your guys to make Liliana much better. So that's something that you have to be conscious of. But I really like it. I'm already in. And from what I was told, that for example, one of my friends plays Chameleon Colossus in their Elves deck for much the same reason.
Okay. That makes sense to me. But can you repeat to me if you felt, I forget if you felt the matchup initially was okay or sort of slightly bad or...
The Jund matchup is mostly good.
Okay.
It feels mostly good, but there are games that play out in a way that benefit them. For example, a turn one disruption spell into an aggressive Goyf play. A lot of times those games can be very difficult for us to navigate because an early Goyf, especially if it's big, like a 4/5 or a 3, even like a 3/4 sometimes, can be a little hairy to deal with because of the fact that our removal main deck is Bonfire of the Damned and Beast Within. So oftentimes we have to reset, we have to rely on our Beast Withins to reset Goyfs to make them manageable.
Okay, that makes sense.
So what I tell people is that it's all about how the mid game kind of plays out, what kind of threats they have on the board when the mid game happens. Because early game, it's you're trying to blow up their lands and get disruption in, and they're trying to make you discard cards or kill your mana dorks. And then the mid game kind of happens around turn 3 or turn 4 or whatever, and you guys basically, we both end up with, if the game is going averagely, you'll both end up with one or two cards in your hand, maybe. Sometimes you're both hellbent. And then you're top decking, but our top decks are so insane that we can be super swingy. So we can just play a Titan and play, or, you know, flip a Bonfire and kill a Goyf and a Liliana at the same time, or something like that. Or a Tassiger or whatever. Usually we have 6 or 7 or 8 mana and just nothing to do with it, and we're just playing off the top of our deck.
So
the games play out like that, and then if they have a Tarmogoyf, or if they have like a Tassiger down pretty early, or a Gurmag Angler if they're playing a more Delve kind of deck like Grixis or whatever, that's kind of how those games play out. But generally it's a pretty good matchup because Blood Moon messes with them so much. And our LD package just can tear them apart. Their mana requirements are so stringent in that they have to have double black for Liliana, they have to have green, and then they have to have red. And sometimes you can basically just pick them off. And then, for example, round one of the event, we got into this crazy situation where my opponent had a Liliana, and I had a Blood Moon and 6 lands and no cards in hand, and he got to ultimate a Liliana and give me the choice, Blood Moon or 6 lands, and I just kept the Blood Moon.
Okay.
Because basically I blew up one or two of his basics, and everything else was mountains. And the problem with that, with Jund, is that red is more of their support color. They can't kill you outside of Grim Lavamancer without black or green mana.
Gotcha.
So that's just kind of how that deck works. And I mean, outside, they can randomly get into a board state where like a Fulminator Mage is beating you down or whatever. But generally, that's how their game plan works, is they have to have green or they have to have black. So if you stick them with just red mana or just red and black mana, they oftentimes can't really do much. So that was round one, kind of played out like that, where the game one, it was that really funny Liliana ultimate. And basically I just kept the Blood Moon in play. He managed to get rid of, he managed to get rid of all my lands. I kept my Blood Moon in play. And then he had no relevant lands. Until later game, he drew a swamp, and I let him have one turn with his swamp, and then I just killed it. So he could have played the game differently, and then he could have kept a Liliana in play had he just waited a turn, but he would have given me another top deck with like six mana. And then he also had an opportunity to Inquisition and Abrupt Decay. I had a Blood Moon hand, so I was going to turn two Blood Moon or turn three Blood Moon, depending on what he did. But he Inquisitioned and took a Utopia Sprawl instead of the first Blood Moon, knowing that he had the Abrupt Decay in his hand to deal with the second Blood Moon, so he should have taken those. And it would have been a much different game. But game two, it was much, much less of a game because he basically stumbled on two or three mana. And I think at the time that I killed him, he had one land, a Bob in play, and I was attacking him for four. It was a pretty precarious lead because I had to keep him off of mana to kill my one Obstinate Baeloth, but I was at 15 when I won the game, so I wasn't really at a serious risk. Then round two, I got to play Michael, my blood bestie. And wow. Yep. And I was on the play, and he got to experience the turn three Titan, where I killed his land on turn two, and then played a Titan on turn three, and that was game one. And then game two was much, much closer. He did mold to five or six, and I was able to I boarded in more of my kill spells like Sudden Shock and Dismember and stuff to basically go after his mana dorks, and I was able to stifle his mana development because of that. And then because of the lack of cards in hand, he just didn't have enough gas.
Sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a 2-0-4-0. And then round three, I played Paul Day. He was playing, he's a super nice dude from KC. I've played him, I think I've played him once before, but he was playing Naya Burn. And basically, I got lucky with my life gain spells like Kitchen Finks and Obstinate Baeloth, and that he didn't have any responses to them coming into play. So I got to gain all my life and put roadblocks in the way. And regardless, I believe that we talked about those games afterwards, and I don't think he would have won. I believe we agreed that he wouldn't have won. Even if I didn't, even if he had like skull cracked me in response to gaining life, but they would have been much closer games. Blood Moon does a lot of work in that match, keeping them off their best spells. And then I told him I complimented him because the better players who play Burn against Ponza don't play their creatures. They don't try to win on that axis, because I can clog up the board. So what my advice to Burn players against Ponza is that you want to hold up your Burn spells. You want to make sure that I don't gain life, because sometimes some of the decks play Primal Command. Like I play Primal Command, and if I Primal Command and get to gain seven life, that's basically a good game.
Okay.
In addition, I play Kitchen post board. I have access to one Scavenging Ooze, three Kitchen Finks, and three Obstinate Baeloth, and one Primal Command. And that's basically, I'm ready. I'm ready to battle your creatures. I'm ready to gain life and then push myself into my late game. So the Burn players that scare me the most are the ones that constantly hold up their mana. And then they look for opportunities to play Swift Spear and get in for a whole bunch of damage. They don't try to incrementally like Goblin Guide and stuff like that, because it usually doesn't work. And I get to draw a lot of lands, with Goblin Guide. So that was another 2-0. And round 4, I played Micah Hornburg. He was playing Scape Shift. And basically, from what I can tell, these were not really close games because I did not take a point of damage in either game. And I know that game two, he mulled to 5. So, and this tournament, I have to say, this tournament, I don't know. I don't think I drew. I probably drew like slightly above average in terms of my draws. I know my opponents, I can definitely tell you that my opponent's draws were fairly below average, just on the whole. I mulligan to 5 a couple times, but my opponents mulligan to 5 a couple times. And I got to turn 3 Titan once throughout the whole tournament. None of my bonfires were insane. So it was one of those events where just there aren't these insane games where I get to bonfire my elves opponent's board for 4 when I'm about to lose. And then I just win. Because they throw up all over the table and pass out. So, and then round 5, I draw. At 4-0, we determined that at 4-0, I get to draw. So me and the other 4-0, one of the other 4-0s, we draw. And round 6, I decide to play my friend Ryan, who is also in Red Green Scape Shift. And he's basically a lock for top 8 as well. So we basically, I play for position. And this game, I take a total of 4 damage. This match, I take a total of 4 damage. And I gained 2 life in my second game, and he dealt me 3, I think with a lightning bolt or something.
Okay.
But that match went pretty well for me.
Did you say red green, straight red green, or
red green scape shift? Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And my quarterfinals opponent. So in the Swiss, I go into the Swiss first place. I get to play all the way through the seats, so that's pretty sweet. And I'm pretty proud of the fact that I went 5-0, 10-0 in the Swiss. I don't know if I've ever done that. But so I come up across my first quarterfinals opponent is Micah. He is Red Green Scape Shift. He is the one that I played earlier. And Scumbag Story, when I heard we were playing each other, I look at him and go, "I'm sorry, dude."
Whoa!
And whoa, it was an instinct, not like it wasn't out of I'm going to beat you again because I beat you so badly earlier. It was more of, I'm sorry that you had to play somebody that you lost to earlier, and that's playing Blood Moons and Stone Rains, and it is basically going to make your life pretty unfun. It was more of a sympathetic, I'm sorry. And but he, great opponent. We had a lot of fun. He stole game 1 from me, but I came back, tightened up my play. Didn't mulligan to 5, so that one in the quarterfinals, I mulliganed to 5 game 1, and then games 2, actually game 3, I mulliganed to 5, and still pulled it out. Blood Moon does a lot of work there. In addition, if you can keep them off of their green sources, a lot of times you can basically slow them down enough. And to his credit, game 3 was going very much his way, and he just didn't draw the lands that he needed. Although I do have to say I'm proud of the way that I played against him, in that I was very cognizant of how many lands he needed to kill me. So I made a lot of efforts to keep myself at 19 or at 22 life, or whatever number to keep him off of that extra land. But to his credit, he played very solid, and there was a very good chance I could have lost this match. But his draws just eventually, he had what he needed. He just didn't have the lands.
Okay.
The semifinals, I played my friend Jacob Birch, who also rode up with me. He plays, in fact, I have never beat him. in a match. In fact, in me playing Ponza, for some reason, it's these major tournaments, the PPTQs and up, that I tend to do well. Everything else in my local store, I tend to just scrub out. I don't know how I can 0-3-1 a Thursday night modern event at a local store with Ponza, but somehow I do it. And basically, game one, I play tight and am able to aggressively get out an Inferno Titan to kill two Noble Hierarchs and a Blighted Agent. He, as expected, saves his Blighted Agent, and then I basically leave the door wide open for him to have a Become Immense. If he has a Become Immense, I die. If he doesn't, I win. And he doesn't have the Become Immense, so I win. And then game two, he Taxing Probes me, sees a super gross hand of turn two Blood Moon or Stone Rain, and I have a Sudden Shock. And I think I had a Bonfire in that hand too, and just gas. And then I'm proud of myself for playing game two how I did, because I played it very conservatively, and that I used my Sudden Shocks. One of the things that I feel like Ponza opponents can very well can lose to themselves, because they don't play as if their opponent is going to kill them at any moment against Infect. So, for example, there were times when my opponent had a Hierarch, a Forest, an Ink Moth Nexus, and a Viridian Corruptor in play, and I had the option to go after, play Blood Moon and try to stop him from Ink Moth Nexusing me, or I had the option to Sudden Shock a Viridian Shaman on his attack step in response to the Exalted trigger. So you have these tons of options, or I could have Stone Rained his only Forest, because that would have been a very solid, sure play. Because typically you don't want to go after their Ink Moth Nexuses with your Sorcery Speed removal, especially if they have mana up, because it's just so easy for them to just animate it and then protect it or whatever. They just have tons of tricks.
Right.
It happens to me all the time. So I tended to stop doing that. But I played super solid and just assumed that he had it, and I just made the safe plays and eventually won that match 2-0. So prior to the finals, I had lost one single game of Magic that day. And then I come up to Dustin Patton, super nice guy, playing Dredge. And I had tons of discussions with Michael, with my friends Jacob and Steven on the way up there, of how aggressively do we board, how aggressively do we prepare for Dredge? Because it's everywhere online.
Yeah.
But with Modern, and being that it's an Eternal format, it's expensive to change decks, I'm not sure how quickly the metagame changes between the, online and in paper. And my assumption was correct in that there wasn't a whole lot of Dredge. There were only, out of the 37 or 38 players, there were only, I believe, two or three Dredge players. But one of them was in the finals. So I was happy to have prepared by basically playing two Anger of the Gods and two Anger, one Fire Spout split in my sideboard, as opposed to the three Fire Spout split like I would love to play, because Fire Spout is so much better for us in that I can tailor it to kill flying creatures or just to save my Birds of Paradise or whatever. Whereas Anger of the Gods can sometimes just set you back so much when your creatures represent 2 to 3 mana usually, then you don't want to double Stone Rain yourself just to kill some stuff. Like, I've never felt like that was a trade I've ever wanted to make unless I'm in super dire circumstances. Unfortunately, Dredge puts you in those super dire circumstances where you need Anger of the Gods to get you there. And so game one, I keep a, which I'm still not sure how greedy it was. I knew he was on Dredge and I was on the play, and my hand was Forest, Sprawl, 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 Scavenging Ooze. and then Acid Moss and Inferno Titan, I believe. So basically, I had some pretty solid, potential there, and that I thought that the Scavenging Ooze would be enough. Unfortunately, I did not draw a second land that game.
Okay.
So I basically went sprawl up my land turn one, untap, play Scavenging Ooze, untap, and then I had like tons of difficult decisions on how to use my mana. Because he was already starting to dredge, and Conflagrate is a very good card for them, because I believe it. Conflagrate is the one card that I feel Prized Amalgam was a good addition to that deck. But Conflagrate also, it pushes that deck just a little bit further. It gives that deck that reach that it needs. And basically, I didn't draw another land, and my Scavenging Ooze got Conflagrated, and I wasn't able to get there, game one. And then game two was this fairly close back and forth, and I basically had three turns to draw, I believe it was a 50% out, where basically if I draw a land or one of my seven sweepers, the land allows me to play an Inferno Titan, which allows me to kill all of his blockers and then just attack in for his life total. And then the sweepers are basically functioning the same thing. I had 2/4/4s and a 2/1 Kitchen Finks that I was basically preparing to get in to the red zone with, and just didn't hit those outs. So between the seven, it was, I think I had played four lands. So I had 17 lands still in my deck, and then seven sweepers. So you do the math. That's 24, right? Is that correct? 24 outs. And then in addition to that, one Kitchen Finks or one Obstinate Bailoff would have actually been just enough to give me that another turn of outs. So I just had a ton of outs and just missed them for three straight turns. So, and that's how I lost the finals.
Heartbreaker.
Yeah.
I'm really happy. Well, I'm glad you played the finals to get that all important play for the entirety of the top eight, especially since your deck. I mean, I feel like I can say that about all decks in Modern. I'm curious if, because MTGO doesn't let you check the percentages anymore of the different matches, because I remember, I think MTG Goldfish had this feature where it showed you, like, percentage, at least for Seal, the percentage of people first and second. I'm actually really curious what that would be for your deck, especially when you have those Sprawl and Birds of Paradise, Arbor Elf type draws. It's got to be really killer. And I also agree with you about the whole, my personal opinion, having to play the WMCQ in September, even with decks doing well, I think even at this point, even for an important tournament like that, I'm actually not sure it shifts enough and that people have, and it's also a card availability issue for a lot of people to be able to switch. And then for myself, it's like one or two friends who are making decks for a few friends, and they don't have multiple copies of the same deck. Yeah. So then you have that as well, and it's not going to shift that much. It's like, and it's crazy that Dredge won your PPTQ, and it just won the SCG Modern Classic Ross Merriam's hand. And it's been, we've been talking on this show, how it's been winning these random Canadian tournaments, like face-to-face games open, who cares? And wow, like, but I still don't see it, even if it beat you, I don't see it increasing that much in terms of popularity in real life. So also, I'm on your side when it comes to preparing for it. You should prep for it in a way, but not like, oh, aggressively prepare for anything, I feel. Yeah.
It's also very hard to build because it has so many weird cards that are stuck in bulk boxes or just whatever. Like, find four Conflagrates. Go to one store and find four Conflagrates. I challenge you. I was talking to Dustin after the match and stuff, and he was telling me he went to four or five different KC Metro stores just to build his deck.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not that easy. And the card you keep mentioning, that's a card I forgot to... Well, I didn't even know it existed, but I forgot to play around it, knowing with my Death Shadow, I didn't make it wait for the next turn to make it big enough to avoid it being killed by Conflagrate. So that was a blowout. And when I saw it like in his graveyard that he needed it to even be able to flashback it fairly easily against me, and I'm like, fuck, and killed my biggest threat, and then I was done for. So
yeah,
that card is pretty sick.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing about this deck, and I'm learning how to play against Dredge more and more as the time goes on. So I'm definitely not quite prepared for it as much as I'd like to be. Because there are also a couple different versions of Dredge. Like, for example, last night I played against the Shriekhorn Greater Garganon Bridge from Below version that basically tries to build stuff up and then just explodes in one turn. Whereas this version didn't play Bridge from Below except in its sideboard, and was much more the straight plays like Nature's Claim and Dark Blast and stuff like that in the sideboard. But there's definitely a whole bunch of ways to build Dredge, and then you just have to learn how to beat the different board states. Like, for example, one of the things that I realized that they could do if I wasn't careful is that if I can stall that, like if I stall their board, they can basically use Life from the Loam to start buying back lands to prep for just this monstrous Conflagrate, where they can just burn me out from 8 or 9 life. And you have to be really careful with that. And that's one of the things that we're looking at going forward is how do we approach this when they can Conflagrate and basically arc lightning all of my mana dorks, but I need to get aggressive so that they don't have enough time to burn me out, but I need to be on defensive so that they can't swing in and attack me. It's this crazy dance. I like the Dredge deck now because there's just so many different ways to play it, to build it, and then even within that, there's a lot of different ways that they can play the deck. So it's really cool. It's really cool deck. It's a really cool deck.
Yeah, I'm going to be looking forward to trying it out. I think it's one of the decks that is on my definitely to-do list, especially with Jeremy having so much expertise in it, and it just seems to be doing well. And you also need the right, like what it really fears is the right type of hate. Some of the other hate can slow it down a notch. But yeah, like even Scavenging Ooze, I would be like some version, like the one locally had like a lightning axe in their hand.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Okay, one show-stopping creature is not enough to stop them. So they do have those answers to those type of solutions that you may have. So it sometimes comes down to Leyline of the Void, and rest in peace, I see Ross is playing 4 Leylines of the Void in his sideboard and jamming, because I guess ultimately they don't actually have to tweak their deck too much for like the other matchups. They're not making too many changes, but then you have that room to just jam 4 of them in the mirror. And I came away really impressed again with Collective Brutality, and I'm glad to see Ross have one in his sideboard. So I wonder how he felt that card was.
Yeah, I know that Dustin Patton played 3 in his sideboard, and I wasn't really having tuned out of Magic for basically the last month. I haven't really seen that card, and I thought that was pretty cool. One of the things that I think is really interesting in how my deck battles that deck. And you actually saw this at the SCG Open, round 14, when Harrison Gills played played a Dredge opponent. I can't remember the Dredge opponent's name, but Primal Command is nutso. When you're basically shuffle your graveyard in, gain 7, or shuffle your graveyard in, I'm going to go get a Primal Evil Titan, or not, an Inferno Titan, or whatever. So I'm thinking that maybe that may be the best way to go about it, in that Scavenging Ooze, while it's nice, it may just be not the right solution for a deck like that.
Yeah.
Because it can overload it so quickly. I don't know if I'm to the point where I want to take the one scavenging news that we have main deck out, because there are enough graveyard shenanigans that you see in modern, you know, people still play Lingering Souls or Snapcaster Mage or whatever else. You know, you can battle a Grim Lavamancer with a Scavenging Ooze sometimes, for example. And then late game against the creature-based decks where you can play a Scavenging Ooze and exile three creatures that have basically been killed by your sweepers and stuff and make like a 5/5 and gain 3 life to stabilize. I think that's still an important role that Scavenging Ooze plays, especially as a one of. But yeah, going forward, it felt like even with Anger of the Gods, I angered one time and they're like, okay, well, I'll dredge back this Grave Troll and then I'll Faithless Looting to dredge back this Thug and this other Grave Troll. And you're just like, oh my God, what is going on?
Yeah. And you're right. I think with the Ooze, like, it's just the one thing that they're going to have, especially if they have Conflagrate, especially if they have Collective Brutality. Well, you can hold up Ooze later, but if you are forced in a position to play it early, they just have ways to kill it, and it's like the one thing they just want to kill in your deck.
Yeah.
So I can see your points.
So, and on the topic of Dredge, so I wasn't going to come back to the A-team without a contest.
Oh, okay.
So one of the really funny things that Jeremy is really great at, which you probably all know, is mispronouncing not only the cards that are in other people's decks, but the cards that he literally looks at every time he plays his deck.
Oh, man.
And
I did that last episode.
Dustin did not disappoint. In that I heard in the conversation that we had, I heard probably 4 different pronunciations of Prized Amalgam. And I wrote down 2 of them because they were just great. The more common Amagram, Prized Amagram, and my personal favorite, Animagram. So, you know, Animagram, you know, whatever. So, And it always reminds me of when I ran the shop in St. Louis that I ran, I had one guy who try as he might, he just could not pronounce card names. So Brimaz, for example, is no longer Brimaz to me. It will always be Brismaz.
Brismaz.
So the contest this week is I want you to comment or tweet at me, but mostly comment, telling me your favorite mispronounced name of any Magic card you've ever heard. The more butchered, the better. I love it. And then on next week's episode, I'll pick my favorite and send you something nice.
Doug called me out on it for last week's episode, and I didn't even realize it. I don't even think I mispronounced it in general. But I said monetary.
You said Swiss monetary spear. Swiss spear so many times.
Yeah, I think my brain was just totally off.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just totally off.
I just want to thank Conflagrate and Prized Amalgam for the fond mispronunciation memories that we're going to have playing Modern going forward.
I'm pretty sure I've said conflagrate before.
Oh, it's that's the most common one.
There's a lot. I'm pretty sure I've used that a lot, that version. But I would have bet against anyone calling me out on monetary Swiss beer. monastery. Get in your head, KYT.
Yeah, yeah.
I did want to ask you what you thought about switching.
Sure.
Because I didn't get to hear your thoughts on the deck I played the 2 weeks ago, basically. Suicide Zoo. What do you think about that deck? If you or your blood besties have had a chance to play against it.
It's tough for us. There's a couple different ways that the game plays out. They play out if you're able to make a big Death Shadow very quickly, those games are very different from the games where you're just a more slow, you're a slightly more faster Zoo deck. So it basically kind of comes down to how your deck plays with and without Death Shadow on the table. The games where your deck plays without Death Shadow are much better for us because your mana base is so aggressively non-basic that Blood Moon, as you probably experienced, it makes it very difficult for you to cast your spells.
Right, yeah.
Outside of Probe and Bobble and Dismember and stuff. But it makes your... Because you play Curd Ape, right?
No, Curd Ape.
Oh, okay. So, well, you play Steplinks, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, Steplinks, okay. Yeah.
So, yeah, when you can't fetch for Steplinks...
Yeah, that hurts.
Yeah, so it kind of slows you down. And then, like, against other Zoo decks, you know, we make... Blood Moon makes Nacatl's 2/2s instead of 3/3s, and Curd Ape's 1/1s instead of 2/3s. And it has a similar effect to you, except if you don't have Death Shadow in play, a Blood Moon just keeps you from playing it ever.
Okay.
So, however, if you are able to lead very aggressively with a large Death Shadow, we have a lot of trouble dealing with it because our removal, as I said before, are Bonfires or Beast Within's main deck. And then game two, it becomes a little bit easier because we have access to Dismember and now Chameleon Colossus.
Right.
Because Chameleon Colossus will just sit in front of Death Shadow all day long. You can't Dismember Chameleon Colossus. And I don't believe your deck plays Path, right?
No, it does not.
Yeah, just Bolt and Lightning Helix.
Yeah, like Lightning Helix, one on the board, and just Bolt. One Dismember, obviously, that's useless against you as well. I mean, the only way to really deal with it is basically hoping to team or Battle Rage over it.
Yeah. So that's, and then Battle Rage is basically, we can get into like situations where we can maneuver our Obstinate Baloths or Kitchen Finks or Thrun or even Stormbreath Dragon or whatever. We can usually play the mid-rangey game. It's just when you start with like a Death Shadow and then you get really aggressive and then we get a little bit low for comfort and then you're able to team or Battle Rage over us, that's when it becomes tough.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I felt pretty comfortable as you heard against it in the FNM. But now I've always felt, a lot of people thought Steplinks was the worst card in the deck. And now the latest Mox results, I'm sort of excited to try this version because the complaints were mana inconsistency, Steplinks not being that great. And Raptor and LSV played, I believe it's a Raptor creation at the Mox this past weekend. And they decided to say, fuck the white, take out the white. And I'm sure Kyle can find the link to deck list, but instead of Steplinks, it plays 4 Gnarlwood Dryads instead.
Whoa. It's what is that?
One green for a 1/1 Death Touch.
Okay.
But the Delirium effect is that it gets +2/+2.
Oh, so it's okay.
Like Wild Nacatl when you have Delirium. Well, and Death Touch, though. So it's a better Wild Nacatl.
Okay.
It's a better 3/3. And so it's opting to play that again instead. And I'm the one unique card that I'm seeing is Traverse. How do you pronounce this word?
Ovenwald.
Matt. Ovenwald. That's super unique. I imagine it's to increase the Death Shadow density of the deck. I don't know what else you might want to search for it. It's probably that.
Yeah.
And it also plays Manamorphos instead, which is also great. Probably something I would play in the original version just because it stops you from having to worry about your turn 2 drop. Like, you're always worried, oh man, I can't play Steplinks and Death Shadow if I play Monastery Swift Spirit. Monetary. I'll fuck it up on purpose.
Monastery.
If you play Swift Spirit first, and you might give yourself a headache because you don't know what land to fetch, and sometimes you don't have that information where, okay, you might draw. You don't know the one drop you might draw with your next card. So with Manamorphos, that does allow you to increase the odds that you are making those turn two one drops in a row in turn two.
Yeah.
So I kind of like that as well. So I'm interested to see how this plays out, because some of the Facebook comments feel like it's less powerful than the Steplinks version, which I can see. Of course, Steplinks has some of the most absurd draws if you have those fetch lands, and then you do have Team Battle Rage in your hand. But there's a funky... so I assume you haven't seen this list, Matt. There's some funky one-ofs. There's the Gorkhan Rampager.
Okay.
As a one-of, and it plays an Inner Flame Acolyte as a one-of as well.
Oh, is that the one that gives +2/+2 and or +2/+0 and has Evoke?
Yeah, +2/+0 and Haste.
Okay, yeah.
So that's...
Yeah, I like especially the addition of Metamorphos. I feel like of the decks that can play, that want cyclers, I feel like that Death Shadow Zoo is one of those, because Death Shadow and Teemo Battle Rage are such important cards to that deck that just seeing more of those just increases your chance of winning.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just also plays into the whole adds to your Delirium.
Yeah, and Delirium.
And just has the synergy. Of course, you're sacrificing, I guess, time, but for more, way more consistency. And I also like the Acolyte, just because a lot of times the reason you can win a game out of nowhere is if your opponent like sort of sets up the game where he can only lose to a haste creature, and having an additional one seems like it would be pretty good to me. Sometimes you just have like you're sandbagging Battle Rage and Become Immense, and you just need that haste creature. You can't just play something because they might have a Liliana, they might have Sorcery Speed removal in their hand, and having another haste creature that's pretty strong doesn't hurt, I think.
Yeah, and with the removal of one Beast Within, for example, our options for getting you when you go for it are lessened a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I still think it's probably favorable for you, but I think it's probably more of like a 60-40 matchup because you're just so aggressive.
Right.
That you can just get us. And a lot of times our land destruction can be a very high variance against decks like yours. Suicide Zoo can be a very high variance strategy where sometimes it's just plain awful, and other times you just can't cast spells.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you're not playing a bunch of lands, right? You're playing with 19 or 20?
Like super low, and I have all these cyclers that make it so that I'm not really sure. Like, again, the problem is I'm not really sure what land necessarily I want to get, and I can't get, at least the original version, does not play any basics in the main deck. So if you have an early Blood Moon and I'm not well set up, I'm kind of boned.
Yeah. Oh, and there's also the fact that because as I mentioned before in the dredge matchup, where there's at some point you have to flip the switch from being this like defensive mid-rangey deck to attacking and actually trying to win the game. You actually do a lot of damage to yourself, which basically means that a lot of times we can just play a Stormbreath Dragon and just smash in one turn or two turns and just flip the game like that, where we can still hold down the ground and then get you with a Stormbreath Dragon or Inferno Titan. A lot of times just ends the game right there.
Yeah, you're right.
So, or Bonfire. I mean, you know, we could just blaze you out.
Yeah, you could. The other thing that I saw was interesting. I'm just scrolling down and I'm seeing some names in this mox, and then the other deck that really jumps up to mind is in 31st place is Spurling. So I imagine that's Matt Spurling. Is playing a black green Emrakul deck.
Huh.
But the black green is just it's got three Abrupt Decays. I'll list some of the cards because it's not like there's just one Emrakul, and it's the new Emrakul.
Okay.
Which is why it's pretty cool that I was always wondering if it would see modern play.
Wait. So it's pretty Emrakul.
Yes. Actually, I'll go through the entire list.
Sure,
minus the lands.
Yeah.
It's four Liliana, two Courser of Krufix,
or Kruphix. I mean, some people didn't say that. One Emrakul, the Promised End. One Scavenge Goose, one Shriek Maw, four Tarmogoyf, one Taxiger, four Thought-Knot Seers, two Inquisition of Kozilek, two Thoughtseize, two Traverse the Overmold, three Abrupt Decay, one Dismember, three Grizzly Savage, two Mishra's Bauble, one Nihil Spellbomb, and one Seal of Doom.
Ah, okay.
So it's like a black green. It's got Grizzly. It's got this delirium. So it's black green delirium, but it also plays like Eldrazi Temples to be able to play those four Thought-Knot Seers and helping to get that early Emrakul. Finished 21st, so I think he did pretty decent, assuming that
Delirium and Tarmogoyf were made for each other.
Right, there's that as well. So, I don't know how many rounds this tournament was, but...
Yeah, it's I like it. I mean, you see a lot of those attrition-y strategies pop up, especially rock-style Deathcloud decks. I know that Reduke, for example, really tried to make it work not too long ago, about probably 8 to 10 months, probably a year ago. I know that he was doing some modern GPs and modern events with a green-black rock-style Deathcloud deck. But the core is the same. I mean, as I mentioned with the Jund discussion, the green-black core is solid. It's just kind of whatever you put with it is up to you, really. Because you still get, you know, whether you want red for Lightning Bolt and Terminate and Dromoka's Command, or not Dromoka's Command, Culligan's Command or whatever, or you put white for Path and, what are they even playing anymore? like the new Vindicator, whatever, you know? I mean, the green-black core is solid, and it's proven. And I it's really interesting to see a Delirium Tarmogoyf package and built with the Emrakul kind of in mind.
Right. And now that you mention it, I had to scroll up to the first place deck. So it talks about a lot of things that you just mentioned. It's a, I wouldn't say Jund Splash White,
okay.
For Lingering Souls, which we've seen many times before, right?
Yeah.
But this actually plays, I was really ecstatic because the best Pro Tour performing deck played four copies of my spoiler card, Grimflare. And here, the winner of the mocks is a 4x Grimflare Jund deck.
Wow, so, okay.
Plays random shit again to fuel that Delirium, which boosts also not just Tarmogoyf, but Grimflare himself. And it's playing, like, this is making me laugh, it's playing one Tarfire, one Mishra's Bauble, one Seal of Fire.
Yep.
So it's playing these three one-ofs to really increase the odds of it hitting Delirium.
Yeah.
And wow, it took down the whole thing. And we're going to see, at least in the early portions, if people are net decking, this version of Jund moving forward, at least for the next couple of weeks. I'm excited to see, Grimflare, as I didn't really see it yet as a modern card, and I wonder if it will stay.
KYT, you gotta,
because
have more faith, man. You gotta have faith.
Even after the Pro Tour results, which I was fond of, the top eight of Portland, GP Portland, had green-black Delirium, but I think other people were net-decking the non-Grimflare versions because no Grimflares made the top eight, so less excited about that. But this card might end up being better, which I would have bet against it, making a more stronger constructed impact than my other one, which is Rakshasa Death Dealer, which people have forgotten was really good, was really constructed playable, was tier one Abzan aggro player playable, but it's just later on they printed stuff like Damnation, or I think it was Languish, which totally made it less good than it was, conveniently made it so that you needed to have mana to pump it twice to survive a Languish. But prior to that, it was a must include in Abzan aggro, and a lot of people have forgotten about that when they ask me, like, how do I rank all the preview cards that have ever been on my site, and when I have that like near number one or number two, they're like, what? But they've clearly forgotten that period of time. But now this card winning a Mox in a modern format, I mean, I might have to just give it to it. It might be the new king.
KYT, you're forgetting one of the most important questions about creatures in Modern. Okay? It's the Tarmogoyf check. So, for example, Putrid Leech. Putrid Leech was played in Modern. It's kind of a Tarmogoyf. Okay? So, and then we get Tassiger, kind of a Tarmogoyf. And then we get Gurmag Angler and Hooting Mandrills. And now we have Grimflayer, kind of a Tarmogoyf. You always gotta be on the lookout for these kind of Tarmogoyf cards.
Yeah, I gotta agree. And with Inquisition of Kozilek like being spoiled, apparently, that was all the rage on Twitter.
Yeah.
Gonna be a lot easier for people to, well, not a lot easier. A lot of the other cards are still worth quite a bit, so. But people can get their playset and be able to try this deck. I don't know. Again, like, just seeing these random one-ofs just to fuel Delirium is kind of funny to me. But, you know, stuff like Tarfire and Seal Fire are fine against a lot of decks. Especially, if you happen to... It's a major plus if you get all the benefits of the synergy and you're playing something like Infect or some creature type deck that you can actually use those sort against, like using it against Bob and increasing your Delirium count for yourself is huge.
I agree.
So anything coming up for you in the near future? Are you PPTQing? Are there more close by that you're jamming?
Doing a double PPTQ weekend next weekend.
Oh shit.
So it's actually really interesting. I have two options if I want to go double PPTQ, like four stores. I can go east or I can go west.
Okay.
And east is a shorter drive, but it's probably larger events and stiffer competition. But west has stores I've never played at and probably is a bit softer. So it'll be kind of I haven't decided which route I'm going. I'll have more friends going east, going to the KC metro area, but I don't know. I kind of want to go support these local stores that out in western Kansas that want to throw events. So I'll make it a probably Thursday, Friday decision.
Yeah, you should check them out and for once and for the first time, and then see if you want to play there again. Basically, <yeah. laughs> some venues are way too tight they're just unprepared for a large PPTQ, and these places don't really... I mean, some of these places do set a cap, but then they bend, I feel.
Yeah.
I feel like almost all stores will bend if an extra four or five people show up. So, I've been to places where I wasn't exactly the most comfortable, and, you know, I still do... I mean, winning is really important, but I sort of want to enjoy my day as well, so that is important to me.
Well, I know that if we were looking at it like that, one of the stores is a definite tournament location because I've played a good tournament location because I've played there three or four times already. And then one of the other events, granted, I haven't been to the other store that's hosting a PPTQ in Kansas City. So that just may tip the scales, but we'll see. But I will be playing Ponza as if there was any doubt.
What?
Surprise. I'm still trying to work out the details. I would very much like to go to GP Indy. I did, however, get married last week. And I don't know if you know anything about weddings. Not only do they take a lot of time to plan, they take a lot of money.
Yeah.
So we'll see what's up. I do have some MTG finance stuff I'm going to be doing out there if I go, like flipping cards and stuff. But it's really interesting, and I guess this is going to be kind of a next topic that I wanted to discuss with you, KYT. Focus. So a lot of people around who have become fans of mine, I guess, have expected a lot of content from me and stuff like that, and I've had I don't know. I've been kind of inconsistent about making it. And frankly, it's because a lot of that stuff is like not playing Magic.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like KYT, you understand this. Every moment that you're spending on the mana deprived site, you're editing an article or you're posting a video, or you're putting tags on something so that people can find it, you're not playing Magic.
Right.
And my goal is to play Magic. And when I'm now to the point where I want to go pro, for lack of a better term. I want this. I've played Magic since I was 11.
Right.
I have not focused my life for any really long length of time on anything. And I see Magic as a personal challenge for me to see what I can do, what echelons I can reach when I really apply myself to one thing. Because I've always been, I've always enjoyed being a Jack Trades kind of person, where I can record audio and I can take video and I can shoot photography and I can do all this other stuff.
So you felt you've always just dabbled?
Dabbled.
But to a somewhat serious level, but not 100%.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, and I have definitely, made a career being a professional dabbler.
I feel like you have taken serious, you have done serious things.
Yeah. My watching gigs, I'm a studio manager at a photography studio, which basically definitely involves everything from client communication to scheduling systems to actually going on shoots and actually shooting stuff and filming stuff.
Absolutely.
So I feel like that has helped me a lot, but I want to see what I can do with Magic. Cause I've always had that sort of, and I don't know if you've ever experienced this, KYT, where you ask yourself what value Magic has to the greater society. Like, what are we really doing? Like, how are we helping people? What are we adding to society? We're not creating something like today in a conversation, I compared it to J.K. Rowling, who has created this magical Harry Potter, this amazing Harry Potter franchise, and has basically not only cemented her legacy, she has added to the world something incredible. But as professional magicians, what are we doing? What value do professional athletes, for example, have to the world?
Right.
And so I've always been constantly battling that sort of, the creative side of me is wants to create and wants to make things and wants to leave this legacy and wants to allow these characters within me to really live and do this. But then I also have this other side of me that wants to pursue my childhood dream and really do this. And then I realized I've had a realization over the last couple of weeks that just because I was watching the Olympics and just watching people live an incredible life and live out their dream, I believe actually inspires other people.
Right.
I think of who inspires me. And, part of my inspiration for wanting to pursue this dream are people like Doug Potter or Marshall Sutcliffe or you. It's just living the life that you choose for yourself and not giving in to that societal grind, to that pressure of, you need to be this way. Your parents want you to be this way. Society wants you to be this way. Your friends and your girlfriend or your boyfriend or whatever, they say you need to be this way.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there's value in that. And I'm just now coming to terms with that. With that idea that being a professional Magic player, it's not really a wasted life, I think. If that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. I thought you were gonna ask me some huge question, but you've got to figure it out. I mean, I think I've had those moments as well. Before it's like the whole, this is always like, who cares? Like, ultimately, right. I'm good at Magic. Who cares? Type of thing. And why did I pursue it so hard? But it's like, at the end of the day, you could say that about anything in this life. You can do the whole gloomy, we're all going to die anyways type of thing and say, you know, why do we do anything? But for me, you're right. Like, a lot of the reasons why I watch UFC or something is for that, for the main, a lot of the main purpose, or when I watch movies, is to gain that inspiration. So that's the big thing. And for me, moving up and making sure, I'm sure you want to make, you want to prove to yourself that you can actually qualify for the Pro Tour. Like, I once was at that position, that question, I just wanted to answer. And I also wanted to do it because I wanted to know, because people can tell you, you know, how to be good or what, like how, what it took. But like, sometimes they don't even really know, or they don't really know how to tell you. And until you do it yourself, that's when you, okay, these were the steps that were required. That's what I did. And then you can actually use that as a blueprint for possibly other things. Or it could give you that belief to pursue other things and be good at these other domains. So there's a lot of other benefits, I feel, from trying to pursue excellence, even if it seems like a non-society type thing. And on top of that, the inspiration, which is why I, you know, did start this podcast, did the website, did all the community, even if it was centered around a children's card game or whatever. I'd rather say card game. Yeah. A card game. people love saying that, but I think I respect the game enough a lot to call it just a card game. And a lot of people have gained so much joy from my content and producing it. And so, and like, even just making a deck list or talking about it, how you created it, it just makes a lot of people happy. Even if you're just doing it, you made the deck to perform, to excel at the game for yourself, but a lot of it can be very inspiring. So I think that's absolutely true. Whether it's athletes, UFC fighters, movies, like a lot of things I watch, like that person might not be thinking, oh man, I'm helping society, but like I'm looking at them and I'm like, wow, that's, they're giving me a sort of blueprint to excellence.
So, yeah.
That's where I'm at on that.
But so yeah, kind of going back though to the content discussion, I'm trying to strip away distractions. So one of the things that, for example, I'm hoping that Indy is, for me, is my last MTG finance thing. I don't, keeping up with prices, sorting, picking bulk and stuff, it takes away from me playing Magic.
Yeah.
It takes away from me learning how to play the game better.
Right.
And the same thing is true with editing videos or writing an article. It's not playing Magic.
Mm-hmm.
So going forward, I am going to be looking for ways to make content, but I want to make sure that I can make it in a way that doesn't distract me from that goal. Because I feel like that's been part of what has held me back, is that I'll get into Magic with this goal, and then I'll fall back on my of community and content creation, and then I lose track, and then I get frustrated because I'm just doing so much stuff around and for the game, but I'm not doing it for myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the frustration can come, maybe it came up for you, like for me, like if there's a near miss, I will look back, like mentally, maybe subconsciously at the time, or like I will look back at some of the hours I spent like doing content, I'm like, oh man, maybe if I just spent those hours just playing this matchup a few more times, maybe I wouldn't have lost this game. So
yeah,
I do think about that sometimes. Like I've fucked up against the heroic deck, and if I had in a standard season for the WMCQ, I think this was last year, and if I had just played that deck at least once in my testing, which I might have if I didn't spend like maybe 10 hours that week doing content, then I may have top eighted the WMCQ, and who knows, could have went on to win. So yeah, I do feel you on that.
Yeah. And especially if I want to, And part of, you know, I went back and forth. I was like, what kind of pro do I want to be? Like, how do I want to make my, what's my path going to look like? And I don't think I can just play modern. And,
right.
You know, and I want to be a good all around Magic player. I don't want to, be, you know, and no offense to the people who love playing one format, and that's the format that they're going to play, and that's their path, but that's fine. But when you get to the situations that you're not comfortable with, you're not very good.
Right.
And I know that I'm going to have to play standard. I'm going to have to play limited. And I love limited, and I love standard to varying degrees, depending on the format. But and that all requires time. So, yeah, expect. I'm gonna take a little step back from content, and then creep forward. I think streaming might actually just be just enough to where I can play and create content, and then it's literally like a 3 clicks to upload that stream to YouTube.
Right.
To create the archive, that may just be enough for me. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think, yeah, but for the benefit of your play, I would just not stream. I would just, like, record instead.
Okay.
I think. Just because I think if your own play is the most important thing, I think that's the, and we've discussed this before, I think having your part of your brain needing to feel like you need to entertain the viewers in some way, live, can take away from your improvement. And it's something that Reed Duke has mentioned to me privately a long time ago, that that's why he doesn't stream. He feels like it sort of could make him play worse, or it's not good practice. So
yeah. And focus time, and getting focus time. Because I realize a lot of pros, there's a lot of pros that don't play. They don't just grind matches. They actually do a lot more stuff. They read, and then they take a break, and then they play a game or two, and then they take a break, and then they think about stuff. And I actually noticed it was really refreshing going into the event on Saturday and just doing so well. And I felt like I played really solid, and I hadn't picked up the deck in like a month and a half. And it was just like I needed that. I felt like I needed that breather, you know?
Yeah, gotcha. Well, I mean, all the best. I mean, yeah. I think many months ago you said you would take it to the next step. Of course, you know, there's marriage, all this other stuff. But, like, I'm seeing, like, I'm serious. I'm seeing, like, things that I've never seen before from you. Like, you being like this, maybe pioneer is not the right word, but like this, like the main guy for a deck, and it, and you doing well with it. I mean, I hadn't seen that before when I first met you. So I'm seeing these things that I haven't seen before, and I'm excited. And you finishing second in the PPTQ, and these aren't easy, by no means easy to win. I haven't won one. And
9 rounds. You, I played 9 rounds. Like I had to, then, I won 8 of them.
Yeah. And now you wanting to take it even further. I'm excited. I'm excited to see where you take it, my friend.
Oh, thanks. I am too. Honolulu, hopefully.
Oh, yeah, that's a big one. As for me, I might have a PTQ this Saturday coming up. And if I do, I'm likely going to play, going to try out this Jund Suicide Zoo just to get a feel for it. If some of you have already tried it, leave it in the comments below what you feel about the deck, or if you've tried the other version. So that's what's up with me, and hopefully we'll get Jay back on the show next week, and maybe Jeremy will be able to call in from Portugal. We'll see. I don't know why he's trying so hard to call in. I told him he could just fucking enjoy his vacation and that he would have to call in at 2 a.m. anyways. He's like asking me, oh, it's 7 p.m. now, which is, so I have to be on at 2 a.m. like, come on, dude. Just like, doesn't your family, your wife care about this? Like, my wife would never forgive me if I was to be podcasting on a vacation. So anything else, Matt? before we
That's it. Don't forget the contest and give me your favorite mispronunciation.
Yeah, collect them monetary Swiss beers.
Prize demogram.
Conflagrate.
Animogram.
Conflagrate. I love that one. And we'll see you next week. Bye, guys.
Bye.